coming to you from the many worlds of the multiverse. It's the podcast that's never the same twice, and always two things at once.
So that's how it started. As many things do as an adventure.
This is Burning Man Live. Welcome back to another episode of The Itch, The Yen, The Craving, The Irresistible Urge that is Burning Man Live. I'm Stuart Mangrum, and I'm here with my friend Andy Grace.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Stuart.
Hey. Hi. I am super psyched about today's show because...
You have been very excited about this one, haven't you?
I just love nerding out with people. People who are smarter than me about things I don't know much about is really my sweet spot. And today, this will be the first of hopefully several shows talking to academics, scholars, people who have studied Burning Man in interesting ways. We were going to call it Nerdy November, but we couldn't wait. So I guess this is Nerdtober.
I think we're just going to keep talking to nerds because we like them.
Okay, that sounds fair. Yeah. So you've been talking to nerds for a long time. I was looking back at sort of the history of scholarship involving Burning Man. It's at least a couple of decades old, but a lot of it happened on your watch when you were leading the communications team for Burning Man. So what were some of the first projects that you remember that were actual, legit academic projects related to Burning Man?
That's right. Some of them were from people who volunteered within the organization or otherwise embedded with us to spend the time and look at the organization. Catherine Chen studied the organizational theory of how Burning Man works together. Lee Gilmore published a book, an anthropological study that we were looking, and that was 2005 or so. Professor Dwayne Hoover at Texas Tech has studied the management and organizational theory. Really, there's hundreds of papers and dozens of books. And we started organizing both just putting a list together so these people could be in touch with each other and share, you know, best practices or what else one might need to know about studying in such a crazy environment, but also got people together on the playa for gatherings that we did call the Burning Nerds and would put them under one roof and sparks would fly and different collaborations would evolve. It's always been an exciting part of it because it validates that there's more than meets the eye about Burning Man.
Yeah, that group is still somewhat active. Last time I checked, there were 740 members on the Google group, yep. Burning Nerds. And just an astonishing range of disciplines, too. You know, I could see, to me, it was intuitive for people to go out and study the art or the city planning. But we've got psychologists, urban planners, people in religious studies, economics, psychedelic studies, performance, architecture. It's really mind-blowing how many different disciplines have found an angle into the Burning Man world.
Yep, absolutely. There's been at least one full-blown academic conference, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
Burning Progeny Symposium.
Yeah, that was in the University of Fribourg in Switzerland back at the end of 2018. It was two full days of people presenting, talking, discussing a lot of those subjects that I just reeled off and mentioned. So it's definitely a thing. There was another academic conference scheduled to take place at Aalto University in Helsinki back in the spring, which tragically was postponed due to COVID. We'll talk a little bit about that because there's been a lot of interesting work. Well, I mean, to begin with, there's a lot of coursework that takes place on Playa too. If you can imagine somebody taking their college class out to the desert to actually do a class.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Arthur Mamoumani, who was on our show a while back. He's a lecturer at the University of Manchester. He brought out his group of architecture students and they built stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Or Carolyn Cook at the California Institute of Integral Studies, they brought a performance group out to put on shows out there.
Right. And Mark Van Proyen over at Art Academy brought a bunch of art students out. So that takes a special type of grit, I think, to not just study Burning Man from a distance, but to jump right in and do it live, which is the approach that a lot of the folks out of Aalto have taken. It started with some projects on Playa. Aalto University is the premier, if not one of the premier universities in Finland, which, by the way, is known for probably having the best educational system in the world. So they are the real deal. But they started coming out and doing projects on Playa and then kind of studying the fallout from those, things like how randomly gathered groups of collaborators might continue to network and grow into long-term collaborations. So a lot of interesting things out of that. Our guest today is Dr. Jukka-Pekka Heikkilä. He holds a PhD in economics from Aalto University. He's been studying Burning Man since at least 2013. He's a postdoctoral fellow at Alta School of Business. And if that's not enough, he's a visiting scholar at both Stanford and Harvard here in the U.S. Joining us live from Helsinki. Welcome, Jukka.
Thanks. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, everyone, for the invite. It's a true pleasure to be part of this and share a lot of exciting insight and also about what the community seem to be up and simply have a nice family type of fireside chat with you.
Our favorite kind.
I am so looking forward to that. Well, let's start though with, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are still scratching their heads over what? People are studying Burning Man and actually getting academic credence for it. I just want to start with why? Why study Burning Man? What's there to learn?
Why tends to be by far the best question. In this particular case, why? It's as simple that it's a perfect experimental platform for either the phenomenon, either trying out different methods that I'm happy to share as we go forward, and also try out different roles as a scholar activist, and not being a scholar. And also, when it's doing research during the event, that's where really one's skills as a field researcher, it's a prime occupational school in that. And obviously, then going from the individual level towards a bit like why it's interesting is that it's part of the phenomenon called participatory cultures, where the participants of given community don't act as consumers, but as contributors. And it's going so exponentially that it's about time to study it. And it has been studied by mostly from a religious perspective. And now we are seeing the emergence of organizational scholars and variety of disciplines pulling in, which is simply fantastic. That's why. And finally, the best thing, there is no better platform to blend arts and science and in different beat methods, dissemination, everything. Yeah.
Well, yes, I would love to hear more about that. I'm just wondering if you ever meet any resistance within academia to doing this type of work. How do you explain it to your dean, to grant-making authorities, that this is a legitimate field of study?
Yeah, very good question. First of all, the project itself, it's called Burning Stories, and now it has about 5 different sub-streams with about a team of 15 people, scholars, artists, and techies. The best thing in Burning Stories is that it's not funded. And out of all the projects, that has been the best one, because then it's really then manifests the experimental nature of it, that usually when something is funded, you kind of need to deliver. And that you can have play and fun at the same time. Then bringing it to the academia, it hasn't been exactly popular. If you think about the concept of business school, and then you have a project where there are really good scholars, really good artists, and it's in a business school where people are really seriously studying economics, and then you have a project that is looking the gift economy, for example. And then also, basically, now the understanding is developing a bit forward that we are getting first publications out and we are really blending science and art. But it has been quite a struggle for the last 3 years to kind of try to argument like, hey, this is a new type of thing. And I'm going to finish in example of one workshop. So the survey data we collect, we share it before we publish it at the Burning Stories Forum. Then there became a dialogue. I was directly told by 2 famous professors, you cannot do that. You cannot share the data before you publish it. Then it goes forward, like, where's the law? Who says so? That it's because we want to support the communities as we go forward. And so it's this type of thing that it touches the nerve of the system in a good way and publishes valid science as we go forward.
Well, the approach of the Alta Business School is a little different from other business colleges in the U.S., isn't it, as far as the scope?
Yeah, so although Alta University based in Helsinki is a combination of business school and three engineering school and school of arts, all of them that were the prime schools as individual schools still at 2010, and then government decided to put out this wild experiment that is sometimes referred as permanent Burning Man, because it's full of surprises when you combine all the disciplines. And now after 10 years, it's really starting to spin off. And that's why Burning Stories is a good home for that. The plan was to host the conference on participatory cultures and capitalism, which would be ideating a bit future directions. And that hopefully happens in Aalto next spring at the second Burning Man Team Academic Conference.
Oh, so a second Burning Man Academic Conference. Awesome. The thing I find really exciting about this project is the way you collected the stories. You know, working in stories, normally you'd send someone to do interviews, but you didn't do individual interviews like that. You have these story cubes that were created. Can you tell us about those?
Oh, pleasure. One of the methods has been using this kind of special method called the story sharing cube. There are 10 cubes which have one button inside, which we call hippie-proof user interface. So that basically you just press a one button and it records. And we've been testing out it in five different burns, and now we have first publication coming out. And it's a size of 10 centimeters/10 centimeters. And now we have a master thesis on the design that it would be a flower where you pass it on, and it's very simple question setting. Share the most meaningful story. And we are developing that as well. And here comes the kind of, personally, the beauty of it is that now when we know how to use the method, it can be applied in the toughest environments, like in Syria, in Middle East where I work, and where it could be quite dangerous to conduct interviews. So that in this case, it was very successful.
Oh, that's amazing. It's amazing.
What happens to the data once it is collected? Do you parse it out by human, by AI, by what sort of analytical tools do you plan to, or are you currently applying to all these great stories that are coming in?
We are collecting stories both on the website, and then we have the survival survey that I'm going to talk about also later, the fresh findings. But on this, the cubes data, we already shared that particular pilot data in the Burning Stories forum, and it's fully anonymized in a text format. And there is one example that artist made a song from one story, and we simply share it back. At this stage, the data is so diverse that we are really focusing on framing the questions further and also like fine-tuning the method. Originally, the cubes were funded because in many cases, the foundation funders have indicated that this is too hippie, which they will see how hippie it is. But it was funded by Borderland, which has the grant system that everybody who buys a membership access can also give their share to a project. And so these cubes were funded by the Borderland community.
Oh, super exciting. Borderland is a Burning Man regional event in the Nordic countries, right?
Yeah, so it's a 4,000 participant strong in Denmark. And it's seen as a northern village-like thing. And the difference is that it doesn't have basically a central leadership, and it's fully self-organized, extremely radical organization form, which has its benefits and downsides. And it's very beautiful in that sense that it's deeply co-created. And now the community because the event was canceled, the community decided to buy land with those who wanted to donate the tickets because they don't have any, there is no one on the payroll, for example. Then it's a small event, so a lot of things are possible in that. Highly recommendable once the traveling is possible again.
Well, I'm curious about the data. Are there any top-level commonalities that you can say that a lot of people did talk about that you could describe? Like, how do you get empirical information out of a story?
So we have now maybe a couple of hundred of stories. And also in the website, which is open after 3 weeks, after Black Rock City, is that we'll need about 4,000 to 5,000, and then we put machine learning into it. And on that, what we are really looking after is we all know that the word transformation is talked a lot. Yet, we know very little. We all have some form of experience on that without of or with burn experience, but the categorization, it's really in its infancy. So we are trying to map out that on three levels. What's the impact of these events and communities to the society? And how do individuals then contribute to the communities? And then how do individuals perceive the change and what it is? Is it the what we are seeing early evidence on increased moral? I really like the study from Yale, where they basically claim they had a big data set of 3,000 people. Yeah, that when you go to Burns, it seems that you become a better person. And it was academics who said it. And it of course, you need to define the moral, but still. So this is a very exciting time to study the phenomenon.
Has any of that work been published out of Yale Psychology? I remember Daniel Yudkin presented on it at the forum in Fribourg, and I was super fascinated. Have they published yet? Do you know?
I've seen, I had a chat almost a year ago with Daniel, and it seems they only looked the one data set they have. And publishing that type of piece, which aims for major impact, it can, some of my pieces have been, it's taken 2 years, three rounds of reviews. It's very slow, but once it's out there, it can have quite an impact. And I know that they are aiming really high with that project.
Yeah, academic research, the publishing cycle is really long. 2 years actually sounds short compared to what a lot of folks have told me, particularly if you want to go for a major journal, right?
Yeah, like it's Burning Stories was founded 2 years ago, and I expect that it takes at least 3 to 4 years on the major publications. Now, we just published a one on a Finnish Burning Man project where we found extremely high levels of psychological safety within a team of 50 people who came and built a structure to Playa. And what caused that people felt safe, and by safe meaning that they felt safe to try out new things, they felt it was fine also to fail. And it basically came down to a couple of things. There was openness on roles that anyone could take any role if you then give basically guarantee that you will try your best. And always the community then, if something went wrong, then community supported, which is very interesting because it was voluntary work. The main architect said like, hey, if any of us in the project group would be paid a penny, this wouldn't happen because that enabled sharing a common goal. And the vision was so strong that we are going to build this 120 square meter wooden dome with a satellite ground station on it. That was really the groundbreaking success factor. And because everybody thought that this project is so nuts. And that was the third driver, was this, that it was so challenging that it brought. And as a reference, Google's success is based on high levels of psychological safety. So that's quite a finding, and we are definitely tuning it more.
That was, what, the second or third project that a group of y'all had done? I think Ansi Lorela started doing some other stuff before that. And then, then of course, because you're Finns, you built a giant sauna in Black Rock City.
Yeah, so the shortly the track record, and obviously the main thanks goes to the regional contact Anssi Laurila, who it was 2015, there was a pike, a wooden pike, where there was a big a traditional Finnish instrument inside. And then second was Koulu, the school, which was basically giving a teacher education within 15 minutes. And after it was piloted in Black Rock City, it was taken to Jordan and Nepal because it worked in that environment. And then came the Space on Fire. And last year, of course, what Finns do is we build a sauna.
Those are all amazingly interesting projects. I was a huge fan of the Koulu. I think that's an amazing model for collaborative co-learning. It's basically based on the idea that you can teach anybody to teach in about, 20 minutes, a half hour, and everybody's good at something. And then just kind of scheduling it as a unconference-y kind of an approach, right?
Yes, that's exactly the approach. And you can think about the feedback from some institutions in this country. When it's a country known for its education, and then suddenly comes a project that summarizes everything in 20 minutes, and that you're a qualified teacher.
Why did I bother getting my master's in education?
I'm curious what you would say about the process of keeping the, you've mentioned play and art. How do you keep art in the, how do you translate that into the scientific world along with the data? You have any examples of that?
Surely. There are quite a variety of things is how art can be used. First, there is, for example, a Burning Stories animation, which is used for people, like it's really a snapshot, 90 seconds, that tells, in a sense, what the project is about. So it's easily digested, and it's done by burners, so that it really reflects with the intention. So that's one use of art. Then the second is we have a plan for an installation that has multiple forms of sound art and visual that is also kind of setting the stage for data collection. And then moving on data dissemination is that art can be used in multiple forms. There is the one song that has been made out of one story, and also the data itself, when it's shared out, it can be used for multiple, let's say, there is a plan from the Borderland data to do a short movie. And so academia has been known to basically sit on the data. But once that thought is given up, and that's why Burning Stories is an association, so that it gives the freedom to share out the data, is that then it can be used with arts. And then what it does to scholars is that scholars also become a bit of artists, which I think, talking about personal view, it's simply amazing.
How did you get to Burning Man in the first place? How did you come? Who brought you? How did you find out about it?
It was time of exploring, living in China. Then we did a stand, and then it was the first visit to North Korea was behind. And I had no idea what I would do after PhD. So then we bought three friends, we bought a one-way ticket to Iran, Tehran. And then we landed to Tehran and we bought bicycles. And then we started to cycle. And we ended up in Armenia. And the secret police or somebody didn't exactly like it because they always stopped us. And then they asked, like, what's your plan? Then we don't have a plan. We don't have a plan for life. Like, it's just literally. And so if you think about three guys, nordic guys cycling in the middle of nowhere, then it's, the country is not exactly used to tourists, but it's a lovely country with the people, like the Persian culture. And then we ended up in Armenia, and then the winter came. And then we do what Finns do in addition to build a sauna. We didn't know what to do next, so we got very wasted, and we bought tickets to Israel. We were told, like, hey, guys, you know what stamps you have in your passport? There's no way you are going there. Okay, yeah, we go. it was a bit tricky tricky to get there, but then and then we ended up in Egypt, and then we wanted to go home after that. A couple of months went, and then a friend asked, "Hey, have you heard about Burning Man in the US?" I said, "No, I have not, but tell me more." And it took me during the week in Black Rock City, it was Thursday when it kind of hit like, okay, this is, I've come to something else where people are just having fun. And then it kind of hit like, okay, this phenomenon, like what's the level of studying this? What type of studies there are? And it's an endless template. So that's how it started. As many things do as an adventure.
Maybe my favorite answer to that question ever. At least the most adventurous. That's great.
And life without adventure is not worth living.
You've done some work in North Korea that's quite unique. Tell us about North Korea. What'd you do there?
So the North Korea, I used to live there between 2012-2017. And I was teaching entrepreneurship between 2014-2017. Before the international tensions went so high and entrepreneurship being illegal there. So that was the first lecture. I always remember it. But the surprising thing is, and this is where the Burning Man experience, there are always surprises, was that it was fine. And that it was kind of blended. The concept of entrepreneurship with the local setting. And we always try to develop the countryside problems that would focus on that. And I'm quite happy I don't work it anymore. Sometimes I left directly from Black Rock City to Pyongyang. It's kind of like, ooh.
Culture shock.
I need to say it's quite intense when you leave San Francisco, you wake up in Pyongyang like, okay, what just happened? And the biggest learning is, and I had talks in Berkeley, Princeton, and other universities about it, of course, the reality we know, that's a fact. Like, it is a horrible country, no question about it, with its known issues. But at the same time, they're people. And what I mean by people, same worries, they worry about love, money. So, always, we have a paper coming up, highly likely on the aspect of coping, and we found play and humor and the topic of love. And no matter how extreme environment you have, these seem to be universal. It's something we share, and it kind of makes sense that, people like jokes and then people embrace love. So, it is in every place, no matter how suppressed the society is. And
I'm pretty certain you're the only person I will ever meet who has taught entrepreneurship in Pyongyang. Did you say that it's actually illegal? How does that even work? How did you get the visas and the approval from the government to go to North Korea and teach a subject that's technically illegal? That just blows my mind.
Yeah, so it started by actually first experiences with the burner culture before Black Rock City played a role in that. It was a period in life that I was in a very experimental mode and sent a CV to Pyongyang, and they replied, "Yeah, you can come. We are not paying that, it's pro bono work." And I was, okay, that's fine. I still have a PhD grant for a flight ticket. And then I went and I was told at the border, they take your passport. And nobody told me that, but then I gave my passport. And then I was told, next day you teach. Then I started to teach. Basically, it's very straightforward. And I guess this applies to any given environment, is that in the classroom, there is no discussion on politics or religion. I didn't have any of those agendas. And I always kept the commitment. And then suddenly the entrepreneurship teaching was possible, and then startup events were possible, then lecturing outside university was possible. So it's kind of trying out new models. That's how it evolved. And if things were like that, I think the country could open up bit by bit, not like China, but in a very different way. And there was even a management course planned that was applying some of the Borderland methods, which then connects it to the Burning Man quite a bit. Hopefully the opportunities are still there, but yeah, there is always hope.
Wow.
What about Lebanon? You've done some work over there too. Speaking of hope and its opposite, what was that all about, and what's the status now?
In Lebanon then, and there is a connecting factor to this also. In Lebanon, we had a project that was giving entrepreneurship education to the most talented early stage women entrepreneurs in the country. And we planned to expand it to the whole Middle East and had a big momentum. And then the country collapsed, and my also the apartment I stayed, it was 400 meters of where the explosion was, and it's gone. And so it's a very tragic story for those who are still in the country. And at the pilot event, we had 20 volunteers from Finland, which 15 were burners. What's in it, and this is very interesting, is that the trust. Trust is like once you went through a project and where basically the big, the Black Rock City or a event in Europe is simply a highlight of the whole year long group. And the trust is built to a level that when something then outside these events happen, it's so smooth to work. I loved it. It's very, but Lebanon itself, yeah, it looks bad. It surely does. But there is always a rock bottom. Hopefully it's now. And then the momentum is there. And especially in women empowerment, in equality, it's surely there. And Lebanese, they have amazing stamina. So I don't have doubts on that.
Wow. How did it feel to lose your place there? In Beirut?
Yeah.
Feel like lose your apartment.
I was in Finland at the time, and like it's the same that happened with North Korea, is that you always think that things cannot go worse. And then you go like boom, boom, boom. And then when the news hit the explosion, then it's oh no. And then it's the sadness, and it's not about the place or where I got angry was like, okay, I've been living next to it, but there were plans to bring tens and even hundreds of volunteers to that particular street next to the explosives. But that people inside, it's very difficult to leave. So at the moment, and especially now, all the embassies are closed, like nobody's moving anywhere. And imagine this, that year back from now, you've lost 90% of the value of the money, and everything is imported. So like that's the reality. Then when the request for help came, and there is also a small burner community there, is when the requests for help came, then comes the difficult part, like who to trust. Because everything is top-down corrupt. But luckily, Red Cross and these organizations are there. So, yeah, it didn't feel good. I was very emotionally attached to it and attached to the people as well. But nobody died from the people we know. And surely the country will be rebuilt.
Hey, let's go back to Burning Stories Project. You got some new stuff queued up. There's a couple of papers that are poised to launch. And tell us a little bit about the survival survey.
Yeah. So we launched the survey. It was around early May, basically asking people coping, what's the effect of a community and how do people perceive the future? We are going to run it roughly 4 rounds. And now with the first round, we got more than 500 answers, which is really nice number to start with. I'm happy to share a short summary. Overall, the participants feel there is a lot of hope, and yet they feel the hope even they are consuming 15 to 30 minutes per day news. We wanted to ask, how is the media? By default, and this applies to all the countries, is that people are under strong stress. It's quite a factor in here. Many participants are perceiving that work is it's unstable environment, yet there is a lot of care, a lot of care for others. And that's something that me and the team of three scholars in this particular survey were like, okay, how the community is coping, because they've been through a project, they've been to a Black Rock City, like it's they must there's probably something. And the caring stands out. Contrary to the care, there were high levels of anger. We didn't specify that, but I guess that's towards the system. Participants feel that they are really well prepared to what's going on. At least that was self-reflection. And everyone sees the experience of burns as helpful in coping. 30% see 10 principles extremely important in their coping. And then it's what are the communities doing? They are doing basically two things. They are sharing virtual coping spaces between each other. And then the main activity is that they are supporting local businesses. How do participants and communities perceive the future? It was a very simple question. And the frightening fact is, and luckily it's on the discussion, is that we are heading towards a surveillance society. Increased surveillance. The second highest ranked answer is that there will be more cat videos. So you can see this is a burner survey.
That's like predicting the sun will come up tomorrow.
Yeah.
And there's no cat video apocalypse coming anytime soon.
Exactly. And coming towards the end, how do participants then see the future system? Is that the main defining factor is that the communities and the participatory communities are going to evolve is the main driver in the change of the society. Like, not many people believe in the impact of or the power of governments. And then we had one question on brands, as we have one brand expert. Surprisingly, the participants were really positive on brands and how do brands stand and how do they give meaning. And all this is shared. There are a lot of quotes as well, and a lot of coping advices is going to be shared at the Burning Stories Forum. So it's all available there.
Awesome.
And you have some publishing coming up too, right? You have some papers?
Yeah. So basically the first one was on what I described, the psychological safety in radical projects, which is where we found the increasing levels. And then the second one is on the cubes as a method and how what's their application in other environments. And also then we are building, it reflects to the conference as well. It's very little discussed because there is so much talk about the system change, but nobody seems to know what are the next steps, which is fair enough. Like we know the future for a week ahead, is that the notion of participatory culture, where it's more inclusive in decision-making in everything, because we are not going to just get rid of the monetary system like that. It would be an anarchy. So that's something we are surely building. And hopefully the conference that blends arts and community leads and scholars and also some business entities to seek ways, what could be next tangible ways ahead and how we do the programming. Again, we post topics to the Burning Stories Forum and then ethnographers map the topics, and those topics that are mostly discussed are then the topics of the conference. Keynotes are very short, 5 minutes, because otherwise we would be just speaking to each other and that's not the purpose. And then the end result ideally is a 3D model of future capitalism.
only three dimensions. Okay.
Yeah,
that's good. Well, I'd love to talk more about that because it seems like capitalism took a serious fork a while back, and there are a couple of different flavors of it. But I'm looking forward to that conference. Here's hoping, knocking wood, that I can come and visit you in Finland. And we're going to go fishing, right?
We are going to go fishing, and we are going to go. It's on spring. It's a good season still for ice fishing.
Well, it'll be a first for me, particularly if I have to wear a dry suit to go fishing. That's never happened before. So let's talk more about what's happening in Europe. You're connected with the Borderland community, and I've been observing what's going on. What are the Burning Man regional groups out in your part of the world? How are they responding to all this madness?
As a result of, obviously, all the national communities had events planned. And then when everything was canceled, a couple of interesting things happened. Of course, there is no data on the reasoning of this, but there is, for example, in Germany, there were so many smaller events. It's really like mushrooming, aligned with the local regulations. So it's keeping the culture really rich in that sense. And this is nothing new, but what's going on in increasing pace is that the communities, either because people have more time or it's conscious or subconscious activity to buy land, to buy permanent land and do a farming there. In many countries, when the faith has gone towards the government, so it's communities are stepping on this. And so there is definitely a good side on that. It's a break, 1 year break, at least from the events, and that it transforms to something not only focusing on basically one thing. And yeah, it's fascinating times in that sense. And what I'm sensing is that, and I can only talk about personal views, is that we seem to be in so deep shit, or everything is growing so fast that something that 3 years ago, for example, was not taken seriously is now taken more seriously. That co-creation is not like, okay, you hippies are doing something that doesn't make any sense. Well, it seems to empower people quite a lot, and the password at the moment is resilience, like these are example communities on that. So in that sense, like, it's a big momentum. And at the same time, of course, those who are in power, people really want to keep that out, which is on the hierarchical structure. But that's what I can see. There are surely some surveys going on, but that's surely observed activities going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment because crowds generally want to get bigger. Next year, you want to invite that friend to come with you, right? And these kinds of events tend to grow if they're successful in creating that feeling of psychological safety and participation and cooperation. But that tension is going to be huge because we have to just make more events that are smaller to baby step back into that world. And we're all going to have to really look at how do you decide who gets to come to that limited event based on what the regulations are and what the safety of doing so is. Does that mean that other events are going to squirt out all the sides and we're going to have way more than we've ever had? It's kind of fascinating when you think about it.
It is. And the recent news is, for example, a community and event called Fusion in Germany, 70,000 strong event, and they already make the decision for the next summer that there will be two events, 35-35. I'm not sure if 35,000 people still give the social distancing, but at least they are putting the events a bit smaller. And in Finland, we talk about the number of 50. And we had one, it was very small, where we draw to a sand, it was by the sea, a map of Black Rock City, which was perfect for social distancing, like that you have your space at 3 o'clock and then at 6 o'clock. And yeah, it worked. Worked really, really nicely. But the events are wide ranging and smaller.
I'm going to keep my eye on Fusion in Germany because that gives me hope But if they can figure out a way to do a socially responsible, health responsible 35,000 person event, who knows? Maybe we could do a, you know, that's about half of our population. So if we were to cut our event in half, what might that look like? I don't know.
How about having a 1 month or 2 month long Black Rock City? But of course, would people leave in between?
That would be the tough part.
Yeah. I think that's what they had to do at night at the Oregon Country Fair, right? All the people who were allowed to be there in the evening would literally like link arms and sweep you out if you didn't have the right wristband. That sounds like a big job. I don't know. That sounds like contact, social contact. So maybe not.
But it's a good idea. All right. I think we're kind of coming to the end of our time together, Yuki. Thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you. Lots of interesting things you're working on.
Yeah.
Thanks for this opportunity. I really enjoyed the chat and sharing of views. And for the listeners, burningstories.org, and there you find the forum, and you will find data that hopefully supports you and gives insight, and it's our pleasure to support everyone at the moment.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that is burning-stories.org.
But I
recommend everybody go take a look. Oh, but before we leave, I wanted to play an example of what you were talking about earlier about mixing the data with a little bit of creativity. What's this clip that we're going to listen to at the end?
An artist called Mikko Heikinpoika, who specialized in the combination of Siberian throat singing and really deep melodic beats. And this particular piece is about love. And it's a love story shared at Borderland. And looking forward to hear it.
All right. Vav, cue up the cut.
It's just very, very, very powerful to realize, like, this person is actually really, really your soulmate. Someone with who you've shared so much already before this life, in this life. When you just realize, like, this person is the half of your soul, the one that you are kind of meant to be together. And all this human behavior, failures, or whatever, you couldn't make it through. But in the deep down, you just know that in some form of existence, you'll just come together again.
Burning Man Live is a production of the Philosophical Center of Burning Man Project. Our web address is live.burningman.org. Our email is live@burningman.org. And we're on all the socials as Burning Man Live. And in case you didn't already write it down, you can make a quite possibly tax-deductible donation to Burning Man Project at donate.burningman.org. Thank you for helping us keep the lights on and this show live. A big appreciation to our technical producer and story editor, Michael Vow. Producers Andy Grace and Logan Mirto. Our promotions manager, the mysterious Daryl Van Ray. And our super friends, Tanner Boger, Devin from the Internet, and Jay Knizzle. And finally, a quick shout out to all of the wonderful people and volunteers who have supported academic research at Burning Man for a long, long time. I can't list you all, but I just want to mention Lauren Chanel Christos, Rosalie Barnes, Caveat, the Countess, the whole census team. Y'all are burning nerds, and we love you. Thank you so much. That's it for now, and thanks, Larry.